Yesterday, I'm honored to announce the NBA panel was rejoined by ESPN analyst Tim Legler. Tim, what's going on?
What's happening, John? I'm doing well, man. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
No problem, man. Always love talking to you. Man, we've been without basketball for, well, NBA since March 11th, and this job be crazy.
Yeah. I hear you, man. It's, you know, it's, we all love it, obviously. It's been our lifeblood, right, this game. And just, you know, sports in general, how much we miss it and how much the fabric, you know, of our society and how you know, so many people, you know, use it for entertainment, for motivation, for, you know, you name it. So to be this long without it has been, it's been pretty brutal for all of us. And we can just pray that at some point you get back to normal, or at least whatever the new normal may be. But obviously, still waiting to see if there's going to be some sort of conclusion to this NBA season.
Yeah, we don't know. We got to wait on enough tests for the coronavirus to see if they can get the season started. That's the first thing. That's the most cautious thing you got to do. That's what we want to see. And people can be asymptomatic and not even know they have it. And we don't know how the domino effect will work with that. If we were to start the playoffs and then someone gets it and everything will be shut back down again. And that would endanger next season if that would happen.
Yeah, and, you know, I personally have felt all along that, and I didn't know what the cutoff date would be, and no one knew, obviously, when this was shut down in mid-March, how long, you know, it was going to last. At that point, there was so much uncertainty. But I knew all along there was going to be a date at some point where Adam Silver in the league is going to start to shift his attention to not affecting next season. And I don't know that we're there yet. As we enter the month of May, but I think that, you know, they've probably laid out a dozen scenarios depending on how things progress over the next few weeks. That'll determine, you know, what path they take. And, you know, if it looks like this would be something where the only way they could get in what would be a meaningful postseason would be to take this all the way up into August, you know, you're dramatically affecting next year and you're altering the NBA calendar, you know, next season and beyond. And I don't know if it ever goes back to the way it was if you do that. And so I think there's just, you know, a lot on Adam Silver's plate, obviously, and talking with the Board of Governors. It's not there yet, but I think if they don't have some serious progress in the next 2 weeks, I think it would be pretty unlikely that we have any conclusion to the season.
Yeah, and this week is huge also because, well, the next couple of weeks, like you said, is huge because they're just talking about the practice facilities opening back up and state tests allowed. But, I mean, some of the precautions they put in place are, like, very serious. I mean, that lets us know how far where we are because they have, like, they wanted four players in the gym at one time, 12 feet between each other, and got to wear masks. Like, that's – you got to ramp up to, like, 5-on-5s, and it's – we're far.
Right,
we're
I know, and that's – you're right. I mean, you just think about the chain of events, you know, from, you know, where we are now to where we would have to get to in that period of time. And not to mention the fact that, you know, see, you're talking about, you know, now they're just, you know, maybe going to open up a handful of facilities where guys can just get in just to work out and not even be around each other. You're talking about maybe a quarter of the league that would apply to, maybe half. Yeah. But, you know, there's going to be so many cities where teams would be at a disadvantage. They wouldn't be able to do that. And then even once you finally got to the point where everyone was allowed back in the facility, the players have said they're looking at 3 to 4 weeks to get ready to play a game. So, you know, just start doing the math on that. You know, even if they – let's say that they cleared everybody by mid-May. Well, the players are saying they're not going to be ready to play until mid-June. So if you're going to get in, you know, 2 months of postseason, you're now up into the middle of August and training camp for the next season is supposed to start in early September. So, you know, you start to do the math on it. For me, what I thought all along was going to be if you did want to have some conclusion, you were going to have to alter the postseason, whether that meant you only you know, only allowed the top four teams from each conference to participate or you had, you know, best of three, like in the first round, best of five in the second round, like you'd have to shorten it up to some degree rather than play out a full 2 months of postseason basketball. That's where I've always been on this. You know, I know a lot of teams and players would probably push back on that if they were going to be affected by it, but you know, it's got to be one or the other. And I think, you know, the last thing Adam Silver wants is some, you know, haphazard token postseason just to say that you had one.
Yeah.
No one would feel that that was meaningful. So he's trying to hold on to the notion that we can still have a meaningful postseason with all 16 teams participating and play this thing out, and you really get more of a sense of a true champion at the end. You know, and I just don't know that we're going to get to that point. And I think there's a reason he said he wasn't going to address it until he got to May, because we just didn't know anything. And, well, May's here now, and I would be very surprised if we don't hear something very definitive out of Adam Silver by, the say, the end of this coming week.
Yeah, but we just can't have, like Giannis or, say, LeBron have a major injury because we have enough time to get their body back in shape. We know LeBron.
Correct.
LeBron, well, you know what I'm saying. LeBron stays and probably anything can happen because he hasn't played on game speed since March. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, and, you know, LeBron is the one guy. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, he's the one guy that this is most meaningful to, I think, more than anybody, because, you know, who else is on that, is in that category of a player that's still elite, that's still one of the top players in the NBA, that is at this stage of his career. So every postseason that LeBron James, you know, would not get to participate in, you know, he knows that he's just moved the whole thing closer to the end of his career. So that's why you heard his comments this week and saying that, like, you know, he's not ready to give up on this season. And you know, no one he's talked to feels that way. Well, yeah, I mean, that makes sense that he would feel that way. But if you take a guy that's a lot younger, like a Giannis Antetokounmpo, for example, you know, you take a guy like that, or some of the other young stars on some of these postseason teams, you know, even a guy like Anthony Davis. I mean, these guys have a lot more years to play, so they might feel a little bit differently about that than, you know, giving up a season for long-term health and to make sure that next season's not affected. Some of those guys might be in a different mentality, but LeBron James doesn't have time to just let postseasons go by the wayside, and that's why I think he came out with the comments that he did.
Yeah, because we all know injuries are a part of the game. I mean, anything can happen next year. But even if you come back, this anything can happen. And
sure.
Like I said, we got KD coming back. If he comes back even half the player he was or better, the Nets are going to be a problem next year. Like, it's the competition is going to be more stiff next year.
Yeah, so these, you know, some tough decisions to be made. It really is, and I think there are going to be different owners of teams, you know, the board of governors, that are going to have a different opinion depending on the state of your organization and the state of your team right now. I mean, you're just not everybody is going to have that sense of urgency that we need to get it done this year. I mean, the Lakers are one of those teams because of LeBron, you know, being this deep into his career. And you know that, you know, if you have LeBron James on your roster, now you got to play for a championship every year. So they're going to feel differently. But there's going to be other teams in this league and other owners and general managers that are going to, I think, be willing to cut bait on this season and let's just talk about next year and getting everybody back and trying to get this thing on schedule. And there's actually, by the way, no guarantee, even if Adam Silver called off the season tomorrow, if he said, that's it, we're shutting it down for the year, there's still no guarantee that we're going to start next season with any normalcy in terms of fans being in the building or anything else, just because there's still so much unknown about what is going to happen to our society when they start to loosen up the reins and allow people to start to go out and go into public places and go into restaurants and congregate. They're not sure. I mean, the medical experts are not sure if this thing is going to ramp right back up again. So with so much unknown, I think, you know, there's no guarantee we're going to start on time next year, and that's why I think Adam Silver is probably weighing every day.
Yeah, which we're pertaining to. Everyone's thinking about there might be a second wave. And if that happens, that's going to set everything back down again, not just sports.
At that point, if they were to, you know, if we were to start to go back to normal life and you saw a spike in this again, say, over the summer or in the fall, I think the next time everything gets shut down, it's going to stay shut down until there's a vaccine, which they're talking about could be next spring.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's just so many. Now, obviously, the NBA, what they have talked about doing, and this is probably what they're really looking into, is sending all of these teams that would participate to one place. And I've heard Las Vegas. I've heard Orlando, Florida at the Disney complex.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they've got the courts, they got the facilities there. Vegas has about four different facilities they could use that could, you know, NBA players could play on. No fans, but it's just such a controlled environment with so few people involved that you, you know, you feel like you could control, just for the most part, you know, make sure everybody's healthy going in. Nobody's got it. Nobody's testing positive, and then you just completely keep them almost like it's like a jury sequestration where you're just keeping them completely isolated from everybody and trying to play it out. I mean, it sounds so extreme. That's the only way I think that you can have a postseason, and it sounds so extreme. And if one player, even somehow, man, they just interact with the wrong person.
Right.
At the hotel or like wherever they're going to be, you know, and then it's going to throw the whole thing off kilter. So I just don't know if Adam Silver's going to think it's worth it to reopen it until we know a lot more about this virus, which, you know, that could be, you know, into the early part of the summer before we know that.
Yeah, Disney would be a good place because it's part of the property. They could shut off roads and limit who comes, who has access. But at the same time, there were reports that they were going to allow close family members to come.
Well, yeah, right. So that right off the bat, can't do it.
Yeah.
Can't do it because, you know, the problem with this is there are people, like you said, completely asymptomatic that have it. I mean, there are tens of thousands of people, if not more, 100,000 people or more in this country that had it and don't even know that they had it, or that could have it now and don't know they have it and have the potential to infect someone else. So if they did something like that, I don't know how you could allow any family members to be there. It would have to just be the team, coaching staff, and personnel associated with the team that are essential. Training staff, obviously, people like that. And that would be it. You know, and obviously you could televise it, so, you know, the networks will be happy because they're going to get some of that money back they're losing. But none of it would feel real. You know, it just wouldn't. And you'd have, you know, asterisks in place, you know, forever. And, you know, I was thinking about the other day, basically these teams that killed themselves for 65 games to have these top seeds and host playoff series, it would be completely negated. You know, the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, which you know, they have maybe the best home court advantage in the league right now, or a healthy Warriors team probably right there. But they would just lose that because you're playing in an environment with no atmosphere, no energy to feed off the home crowd, and it really levels the playing field for everybody. So I think that, you know, there are just so many factors that go into it that I think are, you know, it's just going to be very difficult to pull this off.
Yeah, and also a team like Denver who plays fast in at least at a mile high altitude.
Right.
Moving that to Florida. That's going to be
that's a good point. I mean, it's a definite home court advantage. You just look at their record at home, and it's not a fluke, man. It's not a, you know, secret. It plays into it. I played for the Nuggets, and I played against them many times. It's a legit thing. I mean, the first time I played there, I will never forget the burning that I was, you know, had in my chest and in my lungs because of the altitude. And I, you know, you go in and you hear about it, and you think it's like, okay, whatever. You know, I'm an elite level athlete. I'll be okay. And the next thing you know, you're like over on the sideline looking for the oxygen tank, man. So that's a real thing, and that would be, again, negated and altitude. I think the players, you know, I think for the most part they'd be like, they just want to play. I mean, the last thing they want to think about is, this season came to an end and there's no conclusion to it. So, you know, those teams that were, you know, in that position to qualify, they just want to play. So I guess they would take that over nothing. But, you know, it definitely would not feel the same. And I think there would still be an emptiness around it. Whoever would win the championship, it's almost like it wouldn't be valid. And so there, you know, that's going to be lingering over these guys as well.
Yeah, people talk about Kevin Durant's titles aren't valid because he joined the Warriors. This is totally different, and it will be. I think it will be like worse through the ranks to the NBA.
There's no question. I mean, they still talk about. I mean, and I was in the league when this happened. You know, the lockout in '98-'99. They still talk about that Spurs team as being like an asterisk. You know, like that championship didn't carry weight because it was a 50-game season. You know, anything that's even slightly not normal or there's some sort of extenuating circumstances that have taken place, people view it differently. The same is a good example, Kevin Durant. You know, he's never going to get full credit for the championships he has, because he already joined a great team that had already won a championship. So you know, and had joined a team with a two-time MVP. So, you know, he's got that emptiness, which probably in part explains why he wanted to leave, because he feels like, okay, I do have those rings on my resume, and that's very important for players long-term. They need to have that, and he is a champion, and he's, you know, was finals MVP. So now it's like, okay, now I got to go do this with another franchise where I am the top guy in a franchise that's never won anything, and I've got to take them there. And I think that played into his thought process. So to your point, you know, all of these things, they just don't feel the same when we're analyzing them, and when we look on them years later, it's not the same no matter who would emerge from this, whatever they would come up with this summer. It's not going to feel to most people like a real valid title. So the question is it worth it then to go through it, you know? I guess for the networks it is, and, you know, for the teams to get some money back, but I think the players, you know, they're going to have an emptiness about it that's not going to be fulfilling.
Yeah, this is going to be crazy, because there's players right now having to test for coronavirus. Like, it's
right.
It's well, there is an advantage and disadvantage to the situation. Right now, there's players resting, getting healthy. Like, if the playoffs do start again, a team like Philly, they have Embiid and Simmons back. They both are banged up. That'd be a tough for them, but at the same time, they're going to be rusty. Like you mentioned, you played in the NBA lockout season. What advice would you give these players? What should and could they be doing right now with this downtime?
Very difficult. I mean, here's the thing. In some ways, it's similar in that, you know, we were locked out, so we weren't allowed to be at the facility either. Now, the one thing we could do, and we did this, you could get together and play pickup ball. You know, so like I stayed in the D.C. area. I was going down to the University of Maryland with the rest of the guys on the team, and we were playing together and playing pickup ball, and you felt some continuity and some rhythm and familiarity with your teammates. So this is different. These guys, not only are they away from their team and facility, they're away from each other. They're isolated, right? So you hope, obviously, that a lot of these guys have access to high-level training equipment. Most of them do. And they're, you know, they're trying to work out. And I've interviewed a number of players over the last 6 weeks on my serious shows, and you know, in each case, I always ask them, like, what are you doing? And they kind of walk you through what they're trying to do to stay in shape. Here's the big difference between this and the lockout year. In the lockout year, think about it, the season never got started. So for some guys, you know, your season either finished the year before in mid-April or May or mid-June if you went all the way to the finals. Okay, right. So now you go into the fall and it just never got started. So by the time we did start up and we started playing games again in early February, and they said 50 games in a very short period of time, so the workload was tremendous. It was like you were playing 5 games in 7 nights. You were playing, you know, 3 nights in a row in some cases. I'll never forget what that did to our bodies. It was very difficult, but here's the one advantage you had. It was still basically the start of the season, so coaches could monitor minutes. Coaches could make sure they weren't running anybody into the ground early, and you just wanted to try to get guys ready for that last 20-game stretch to see if you could make the postseason. This is entirely different because they were already in peak condition. Now you go shut it down for a few months, and when you start playing again, you're going to be playing in the most meaningful basketball of the year. So so the intensity is greater, you know, the energy, the physicality, like all of that will be associated with playoff basketball. To basically go 3 months without playing and then hit the ground running full speed in playoff basketball, like that to me is mind-blowing to think of, you know, what that is going to feel like for these players. There's no time to pace yourself. You know, you gotta win games right off the bat, or you're going to find yourself behind the eight ball, and maybe a team like Milwaukee or the Lakers that had this incredible year and set themselves up to play in the finals, you know, maybe now, you know, you find yourself losing a couple games early and you're out in the first round. So it's just a very strange dynamic that you have to come back after that long of a layoff playing the biggest games of the year right off the bat. We at least had a chance to get 15, 20 games under our belt that year that still felt to us like the beginning of any other season for the most part, other than you were just playing a lot more games in a shorter period of time.
Yeah, some teams outside of the playoff race might want a regular season to finish, like the Trailblazers and the Pelicans. They're right behind Memphis. But, I mean –
yeah, I mean,
they got to do.
Yeah, and you heard Steve Kerr's comments the other day were interesting, because he said, They're treating it like they've already moved on. And I'm like, yeah, you're 15-50. That makes a lot of sense. You should move on. Like, this was a this was the worst year you guys have had. You got guys hurt. You're going to get the cavalry back next year with Steph coming back and Clay coming back, and you still have Draymond Green, and you got the number one pick potentially, you know, one of the top picks in the draft. So, yeah, you should be thinking about next year. But, you know, some of these other teams, you know, if you're a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo and you're still thinking about last season and how disappointing it was to have the best record in the league and then lose to the Raptors. Right. So you got that. He still hasn't had that thirst, you know, quenched yet. He's trying to break through and be a champion. And this was another one of those years, record setting for their franchise. And so for him, he's thinking like, man, you know, to just write this season off, who knows what happens next year with, like, other guys on his team, himself. You never know. Like you said, you're always one cut away from tearing an ACL, from altering the course of your career. So to be in position where you have now home court clinched throughout the entire postseason, guy like that, he probably wants to, whatever it takes, to get back on the court and try to win a championship, because, you know, guys like that, they're so driven, and they know that, you know, they have to get that done and to check that off. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, man, what happens here over the next few weeks.
Yeah, speaking of Memphis, what's your thoughts on Ja Morant, who's basically already had the Rookie of the Year locked up? I mean,
coming out, I thought I was an enormous Ja Morant fan, mainly because look, he's crazy athletic, he's got great quickness. I was blown away by his playmaking and passing ability. So I compared him to, I thought he's a hybrid version of Russell Westbrook and John Wall, in that he's got the speed of Wall, the athletic, the explosive finishing ability of Westbrook, but he's got the playmaking ability of a John Wall, who, you know, John at his best is a 10 assist guy. He's a guy that wants to push it and find you. That's what John Morant has. So I'm a big John Morant fan, and you're right, he probably, you know, is going to win that award. The only other thought I have on it is, I do think, I'm one of these people that believes, unless you mandate in the rules that a guy has to play 41 games or more, or whatever number the league wants to come up with, I don't think it's out of the question. If Zion Williamson finished the year and got those last 17 games in, and he averaged, you know, 25-10, and that team ended up making the playoffs, and you look on his year, shooting 60%+ from the field, 23, 24 points a game, you know, eight, nine rebounds. To me, I'm going, okay, I know what my eyes told me. As great as Ja Morant has been, and as he's going to be, Zion Williamson was the most dominant rookie. But there are people that just flat out would not vote for a guy that missed that amount of time. I mean, same thing happened to Joel Embiid a few years ago when Malcolm Brogdon got the Rookie of the Year. And I didn't really understand it, because Embiid played 31 games, clearly was the most dominant rookie in the league. And, you know, people just made up their mind. He didn't play enough, but yet they put him on the first team all-rookie team. So to me, it's one or the other. Is the guy eligible to be all rookie and be Rookie of the Year, or is he not? And tell me what the rules are, and I'm fine with it. Like, some people think, well, if you were on a roster as a rookie and just didn't play because you were hurt, then it shouldn't count as your rookie year when you see the floor, like Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid. But I said, wait a second, Blake Griffin won Rookie of the Year in his second year in the league because he didn't play his first year. So until they change the rules, I'm not going to hold it against the guy. So, you know, for me, Zion Williamson, to me, has been the most dominant first-year player that I have seen this year. Right. But I think Ja Morant is going to win the award.
Yeah, awards are awarded by winning. And right now, Ja Morant has Memphis in the eighth spot to make the playoffs. But like you just said, if they get those last games in and Zion gets them to the playoffs, that totally changes everything. I totally agree.
Yeah, and I think now it's a moot point, because they're not going to play any of those regular season games. I don't see any way they could. So Zion is not going to get 17, 18 games. He, you know, even if they gave him 5 games, it wouldn't be enough, because they're not going to make up that ground. So at this point, it looks to me, and at some point they will hand out awards. I mean, you know, I don't think there's any reason not to give out awards. The only thing you're not going to crown, obviously, is an NBA champion. But you could still give Coach of the Year, MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man, Rookie, all of those things.
Yeah.
Can still get hand, and they will get handed out at some point. The media will vote on those. And
right.
You know, Ja Morant, at this point, because of the way things ended, and look, he had a year that's deserving of it. He's going to be Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. The NBA G League professional pass is gaining traction with three high-profile signings, Javon Green, Deshaun Nix, and Isaiah Todd. And what effect is this going to have on NCAA? You know, I think that it's going to affect some players depending on what they want to do. Like some players might still want to go to college because they need the exposure. They're not going to be one and done. I mean, it depends if they're going to like, play for a high-profile coach like Coach K. I believe that's the strongest point to keep going to college.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm seeing more guys like make this decision, and I'm, you know, once you start to see, you know, more than just the one outlier type guy like a Brandon Jennings do it, you know,
yeah.
When he did it, it was like, wow, this guy's going to go play overseas and not go play in college. You know, now you're starting to see more of it, you know, with LaMelo Ball and you're who's the kid that just the number one recruit for Michigan, the five-star kid that just came out and said he's going to go play professionally. And he's not, I forget his name, but he's not going to go to Michigan. It basically completely affected their recruiting class. I think you're going to see more guys, especially when you see something like this.
Yeah.
Because you start to go, man, there's a lot that's not promised, man. And there's crazy things can happen.
Yeah.
So I need to go get my pro career started. And so you're going to see, I think, if a kid has an opportunity to go overseas and make some money, now that there's this uncertainty, like this kind of thing can happen to you, you might see more and more guys trend that way.
Yeah. ESPN came through in the clutch. They released the last dance.
Yeah, right. Well, no doubt. I mean, we're all starved for something to watch, and it's lived up to the hype, man. It's been great so far.
Yeah. You played in that era with Michael Jordan. What was it playing like in that physical era where the worldly pals called, like they just let you go?
completely. I mean, it is two different games. I don't care what anybody says. I played during the decade of the 90s. I watched the game, you know, fell in love with the game in the 80s when I was in high school and college, played in the 90s. I know what the game looks like now.
Yeah.
And look, they've done it intentionally. The league has tried to get away from that physicality and star players getting laid out the way that they used to. I mean, look at the abuse Michael Jordan took at the hands of the Pistons. It's a miracle that guy played 82 games and he didn't have a serious injury early in his career. The league didn't want that. They wanted to be more free-flowing. They want the talent of these guys and offensive players to show through. So obviously to do that, you can't impede their progress. You can't put hands on them on the perimeter. You can't, you know, hit them too hard at the rim or they're going to go look at the replay and now you're going to get a flagrant two. You're going to get ejected. It's going to cost you money, you know.
Right.
So it is a completely different league. I don't care what anybody says. So what's been one of the cool things about watching this, it has taken me back and flooded my memories with – what it was like to play in that era when you had to go up against the Knicks teams in the mid-90s with you know, Charles Oakley and Anthony Mason and Starks and Derek Harper and those guys. When you had to go up against the Davis boys in Indiana, when you had to go up against, you know, Lonzo Mourning and that group down in Miami, when you had to go up against the Pistons.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I can go up and down, you know, Utah was a very physical, Seattle. I mean, these were, and believe me, man, it was like an accomplishment to get to the rim off the dribble and finish. I mean, because you were just not allowed to get there. And so, I mean, for me, I think hopefully this younger generation of players, like these kids that are now in like, you know, middle school and high school, that obviously know of Michael Jordan. They, you know, they know that he's considered the greatest of all time. I'm sure they've looked at stuff on YouTube. This is different. This is like showing you firsthand what it was like and what he had to go through to break through, and I think it's going to give a whole other generation of players a much greater respect for Michael Jordan, and actually in a lot of people's minds, like firmly cement, you know, his standing as the greatest player of all time, because to have to go through that and still break through and win six championships and six tries, you know, I think that people will always hold players from this generation just a notch behind no matter what they accomplish because of the physicality of the game. It's just not something that LeBron James and the modern player, Steph Curry, that they have to contend with. They just never had to deal with the kind of defense that Michael Jordan and those guys had to see.
Yeah, I mentioned previously, I was surprised when Trae Young tweeted out that he was surprised Mike had those accomplishments in 88. Like, I thought he would know that, but he is young, though.
I interviewed John Collins yesterday. It was interesting, and the third year player from Atlanta. He's going to be an all star in this league. I mean, he's 21 and 11 this year. He's got a really bright future. Really explosive front court player. It was interesting because I looked it up before I interviewed him. He was born September of 97, so he was born right before this team and the Last Dance went to training camp.
Wow.
All right, so for him, exactly, he said, yeah, all he knows of Jordan is, like, looking up some stuff on YouTube over the years. But, like, this is, and every NBA player, I'm sure, is glued to it, learning about what the league was like at that time and he had to overcome. It's great educational tool for these guys, man. They can relive this right now for all of us. It's been a great ride, and I can't wait to watch the next two episodes on Sunday.
Definitely. What player do you think will play in the era you played in, that plays today? I think if anybody, the first player comes to my mind is LeBron because of the size and the basketball IQ. Because LeBron, they always make
the best
basketball
player.
No doubt. I think LeBron could adjust because of the size and his IQ. I think he could play.
Yeah, he could. That's a great one. I think Kawhi Leonard also because, even during that time, the three-point shot wasn't that prevalent. So, he could operate in the mid-range area of the floor. He's got incredible strength.
Right.
He's never off balance because of his strength. So he could play through contact, still do what he needed to do. You look at guys that are super highly skilled, and you go, okay, yeah, obviously Steph Curry would be great in any era, but would Steph Curry be a two-time MVP if he could get hand-checked 40 feet from the basket? I don't know. What about a guy that's built as slightly as Kevin Durant? What about Anthony Davis? Guys like that, and Anthony Davis, look at his injury history.
Yeah.
What if Anthony Davis now had to play in an era where Charles Oakley was going to kind of go through your chest bone every time you took off to go to the rim? Like, would he have been seriously hurt more? Like, would he have missed more time? Would his career have been different? So, look, these guys are talented enough to play in any era. But the physical aspect, when you look at guys that are a little bit more slightly built,
they
didn't have to contend with that, and it'd be interesting to watch. Now, obviously, if you take guys from that era and move them now, like, I think, how could you possibly guard Michael Jordan? I mean, when you can't put a hand on Michael Jordan as quick as he was and explosive, guys can you can play this game. It's like a chess match, putting guys and transposing them into different eras. And we're never going to know, obviously, but if you want to, talk about guys that I certainly think could have excelled at the same level in that era, LeBron and Kawhi would be at the top of the list.
Yeah, I think Mike could definitely play in this era because he averaged 30 for his career. I think he would average around, 38 in this era.
Yeah.
He shot 83% from the foul line. Like,
right.
He couldn't stop it. You couldn't stop it. Put him in line, you want to score. Then go by you.
Well, the other thing, the other thing he doesn't have to deal with, he wouldn't have to deal with nowadays, is you look at the way teams, their lineups they put out there. The four-man now in the NBA is basically a three-point shooter most nights. So defensively, there's just less beef on the court and less resistance at the rim. So now not only can you not touch Michael Jordan 30 feet from the basket, now you also don't have anywhere near the shot blocking capability on the floor behind you. So think about, just unimpeded Michael going to the rim, and then when he gets there, if you're lucky, you've got one guy on the court that, for your team that can contest a shot. And there are a lot of teams now that play so small, they don't even have that. So I don't know I don't know what you would do with that guy, honestly.
Crazy. Tim, thank you so much for joining me again on NBA Panel, man. I always love talking to you. Thanks for joining
me. My pleasure, John. Anytime. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, see you.
You got it.
Yes, that was ESPN NBA analyst Tim Legler once again joining NBA Panel. Catch you next week.